keynote speaker, Mr. Bruce Bourbon.
Thank you, John. Good morning, everyone. It's a privilege for me to be here. I have to admit that on occasion I have an opportunity to address a group like this and talk about consumer demand. Typically, however, I'm at the end of the program. We start at the other end and get to the consumer. So I can conclude only one of two things. One, that you really recognize the importance of the consumer, and that's where you want to start. Or two, you want to get this out of the way so you can enjoy the rest of the program. So we'll move along quickly and try to make that happen. Jim Bradford, a friend of mine from Iowa days, will notice the color of the slides, Iowa State colors. We'll get that plug in there, Jim. I've been in my position here in California for about 6.5 years. When I was considering coming to the position, I was attracted by the huge consumer base in this state as well as the diversity of it. And I was aware that that would create some marketing challenges, but folks, frankly, little did I recognize how diverse they would be. Just to help me get a little perspective, those of you from California, would you raise your hands? Those of you from a state other than California? Okay, we got some diversity. For those who didn't raise your hands at all, I point out you're in Sacramento, if that helps you with a point of reference for the future. There we go. I was talking about the diversity of the consuming public in California. We've got many, many consumers, lots of different sizes, shapes, colors, races, ethnic groups, and so forth. And that certainly gives us some tremendous marketing opportunities, but it also creates some real marketing challenges for us. Let me point out, as the U.S. Census Bureau did from the last census in 2000, that in the state of California, here on the West Coast, we no longer have a racial or ethnic majority. What do we mean by that? Let's just take a look at a few demographic statistics to kind of begin to put some things in perspective. California has, with now over 34 million consumers, between 12 and 13% of the nation's population. So obviously we have that large consumer base. If we start looking at racial, ethnic mixes and so forth of our population, and I've got on this chart, I put this on a percentage basis or in percentage terms, white persons not of Hispanic or Latino origin, 46.7%. Thus, there is no majority. That compares to a 69-plus percent for the nation in total, so 23% difference there. Persons of Hispanic or Latino origin were at 32.4. That is now closer, I'm told, to 34%. So a third of the population in California is Hispanic or Latino, and that's a good 20-some percent over the national average that you see there in the right-hand column. Asian persons, 10.9 or 11%, as compared to the national total of 3.6. Black or African American persons, 6.7% of the 34 million in California are black. That's less than the national average, which is a bit over 12%. Then we can move in and take a look at some other things that we've put here. I put some statistics up just regarding age. If you look at the persons under 18 years of age, you see we're a couple percent above the national average, so we skew a little bit to the younger side. Persons 65 years or over, we're a couple percent less than the national average at about 10.6%. If we look at gender, never knew we were short of females, but we're 50.2%, so a little bit below national average. I don't know if that means much. There are some doctors in San Francisco that play around with gender changes, so maybe that's what makes us just a little bit different. And an interesting one, if you look at persons per square mile, geographically, California is a very, very large state. But you take that population and you will see that we have 217.2 people per square mile, which is much more densely populated than the United States as a whole. So obviously, as a marketer, somebody who is communicating to consumers, trying to get the beef message out there, in our case, we have a lot of people concentrated in some relatively small areas, so that does give us some marketing opportunities. I present all this to you because it poses a question. The question is, with a population and a consumer base that diverse, can we come up with one marketing theme and approach, one message that carries the message that we in the beef industry need to carry to our consumers and be effective? Or, rather, do we have to diversify, set up various smaller consumer segments, and carry that message out in a multiple effect with different messages? And if you do that, can we be cost-effective in doing it? And as a marketing organization, as an organization working with your beef checkoff dollars, that is really a decision that the California Beef Council wrestles with continuously. I'm going to talk about retail and food service channels just a bit to get us going here. And this kind of ties into what we were talking about as we looked at the West Coast consumer. The product, obviously, the majority of our beef is still marketed through retail stores. I cheated with the last one there, the Save Mart Stars. I've indicated on a title here that these are the retail chains in California with more than 100 stores. If you look at Safeway and Vons, Safeway is Northern California, Vons the same company, Southern California different name. There are 569 stores within that one chain. Albertsons a couple years ago acquired what used to be the Lucky's chain. In addition to what they already have, they have a Northern and a Southern California division, and you can see that there are 509 stores there. Raley's Knob Hill Bel Air, that's a chain that merchandises a lot of those of you who produce certified Angus beef, 148. There are 327 Ralph stores. Stater Brothers, a chain in Southern California, 155 stores, and Save Mart's nearly 100 at 98. Bottom line there is that we have 1,806 retail stores in these six chains. Now, we as a marketing organization, your marketing arm of the beef industry, specifically in our case here in California, we've got to develop programs in order to work with them. We have gone away from generic beef advertising. We no longer, as a state council, because we don't think it's effective, merely buy radio or television advertising. We don't do television, one, because we can't afford it. Radio, we're almost to that point these days, and I'll talk more about that in a second with our Hispanic marketing program. We no longer are able to do just general media advertising. In addition, as I said, we don't think it works. How do we approach this large market, these various chains? Because of the fact that they have so many stores in many of these chains, we sit down and try to negotiate featuring programs with the retailers. We'll go to Albertsons, for example, with the 509 stores. Maybe it's just the Northern Division, maybe it's the Southern Division, maybe it's both at the same time. Recognizing that, in our opinion, the greatest impact on the volume of beef that's going to be sold at retail is how much emphasis that retailer puts on it and how much featuring they do, not in how much media push we can put behind it, although that is somewhat important. We negotiate with the retailer to increase the number of features that they have in their weekly ad flyers. Maybe in a typical weekly ad flyer, they would have 6 beef items. We will negotiate with them and say, if you will, in for a 2-week period, 1 week, 2 consecutive weeks, have 8 items rather than 6, and if you will track sales figures for us and give them to us, not just of the featured items, but of total beef movement, we'll try to bring something to the table to help you along in your marketing efforts. And what we bring then is radio, but not a generic radio buy. It's something that we script that talks about whatever chain we're working with, beef sale that week in which they have certain cuts at this price and it's great for the grill, or it makes the great stew in the winter or something like that. Get very specific. So what we're trying to do with a targeted radio buy, just in these areas, the geographic area of the stores, the chain that we're working with, we're trying to generate some additional traffic to them. And we may throw in a consumer incentive. And in this radio script, we would say something like, and by the way, register at your Northern California Albertson store to win an iMac computer or a trip to Hawaii or something like that. Oftentimes we'll get that donated. Generates the traffic, and it also, through the entries, kind of helps us monitor the progress that we're making. We do this on a year-round basis. $400,000 of our budget goes into these retail marketing partnerships. That may not sound a lot to some of you from some of the larger states, but that's about a third of our budget, of our program budget. And in monitoring the sales, we have seen from 23 to 255% increases in sales figures during these two-week periods. And we measure that every time. We won't work with a retailer unless they'll give us the sales figures. Some of them are yapping about it. They don't like to do it. We try to handle it confidentially. I won't tell you who's 23 and who's 255 and so forth. We have a confidentiality agreement with them. But those are the types of increases we can get. And we think in a market like California with a huge numbers of stores and with a large consumer base, this is the most effective retail marketing that we can do. Let's move away from retail and talk about another major marketing channel or beef movement channel, and that's the food service industry. Retail still, on a tonnage basis, surpasses the amount of beef that is merchandised through food service channels, but that gap is narrowing, and the dollars that are generated for our product exceed retail by food service. So restaurants are a very, very important segment to us. $37.7 billion retail sales in California, food and drinking establishments, but the drinking ones are the ones that also would serve food. And you, excuse me, you'll see the trend line and look what's happened in the late 90s. We've just seen a surge in that, so the food service industry is really growing. Total economic impact is estimated to be over $97 billion. If we look at the number of eating and drinking places in California, it's about 75,000. And again, you can see from 1992 up through a year or so ago, that is again dramatically increasing. I calculate it, and it's a dilemma for us in marketing. On our California Beef Council staff, there are four of us who do program work. If we work 365 days a year, 24 hours a day, and called on the restaurants, we would each have to make 51 calls per day. Now, we don't work 365 days a year. It's only about 350 each, so that doesn't quite cut it. But the point is, it's impossible for us to have direct contact with the food service industry in this state, and it is huge, and it is so important to us. So what do we do? Excuse me, and I want to throw just a few other figures at you before I talk about that. I apologize. I found it interesting that 6% of the total employment base in California is a result of those people working in restaurants. Guess who the largest employer, what industry that is? State of California, government. Next to the state of California, the 6% that work in restaurants, that's the next largest employment sector. Half of the adults in California are going to eat in a restaurant each day. Obviously, noontime is the largest percentage of that, but you know, I found that to be a kind of an astounding figure. 50% of the people on a given day are going to eat out. Even more astounding, I think, is the fact that 52% of all restaurant sales are either for takeout or delivery. So that is certainly a segment that is growing rapidly here in the West Coast, particularly in California. Now, our dilemma, what we wrestle with, is how are we going to be able to market through the food service channels? And we basically, 3 years ago, piloted with one of the food service distribution companies. happened to be Cisco, happened to be one of their houses. There's one in the Central Valley in Modesto, where we began an experiment with them. They have about 90 marketing associates, salespeople. Each marketing associate has about 35 clients. So we got involved in some promotions with them where we set up an incentive, put some sales goals, tried to give them motivation to go out and sell more product. We learned some interesting things. The food service distributor salesperson is afraid of beef. They don't know that much about it because they have to sell toothpicks, napkins, cleaning supplies, vegetables, everything else. Guess what? The big ticket item is the center of the plate protein items. Most of these people aren't specialists in the meat industry, and here they are out on the street calling on the restaurants as well as institutions and cafeterias and so forth, and they're afraid of our product. Because they are so busy, and they are just like the rest of us, so time-starved, that if they get a complaint, and it's a big-ticket item, they've got to go back and make good on it, and that takes more time than they have. And I've had them tell me, we're afraid of this. So we're working with them in food shows. We're working with them in new salesperson trainings, in which we train them and try to give them a beef 101 set of information, as well as recipe cards, entree suggestions, and so forth that they can take with them out on the street. And we have seen 35% sales increases in these types of incentive programs that we put up. Cisco has now a Sacramento, a San Francisco, a Modesto, an L.A., and a San Diego house. They call their districts houses. I think I'm most proud of the fact that the largest Cisco house in the United States is in Los Angeles. When they hire new marketing associates, they do not let them go on the street without us first coming down as a beef council and giving them a half-day training in the basics of beef. We can't give them everything they need. We give them basics, and basically we want them to know who we are so that as they get questions and as restaurateurs are asking them questions, we can become a resource. I've listed Alliant there. I've listed U.S. Food Service. My slide is outdated, even though I put it together, because they, like, tends, like is the trend in America, recently merged, so that's now one company. But we're working with four of the Cisco houses and three of the now U.S. Food Service / Alliant houses in these types of programs. And, again, what we have done, and in the L.A. house, for example, those four staff people that we have that work programs just became 270. And we can start making the rounds and reaching the people. And again, it's what we have to do here in a heavy populated area to get some reach. I want to come back to this slide, kind of in concluding here, and if my pointer will work. I want to focus just a little bit here on the Hispanic or Latino origin population and the Asian persons. A third of our population is Hispanic, 11% is Asian. I can tell you that the Hispanics are heavy beef users. They're some of our very best customers. Asians are light beef users, don't use a lot of product. Here we are now as a marketing organization with some limited resources trying to establish priorities. Where should we go? How many of you say with Hispanics? Half the vote, show of hands. How many would go there? How many with Asian? Maybe a few more Hispanic, but there was some people on both sides. Bottom line is we really should be doing both. But our focus as a beef council has been here. And you may question that. They're heavy users already. Why would we put our focus there? I think a basic premise in sales is that it's always easier to make an incremental sale to one of your good customers than to go find a new one. Some of you selling bulls may be able to relate to that. One additional to your better customers is probably easier than going out and finding a new customer. I also go back to where the beef industry was about 20 years ago when we were taking a look and we were horrified as we saw demand decline at the increasing number of light users that we had. And so we as an industry nationwide said, we've got to address the light user. We've got to reverse the trend. So we put a lot of emphasis there. It's where we put our resources. And frankly, we made some progress. But while we were shoring up the light user, getting an incremental serving every 2 weeks within light users, we lost some of our heavy users, and the loss of the heavy consumer was more of a loss than what we gained with increasing the light user. So our philosophy is that we're going to take these good customers, the heavy beef user, the Hispanic consumer who is serving beef four times in a week period as compared to about 1.5 to 2 in the general population, and maybe not get the incremental sales, but shore that up and be sure they are maintained as a good customer. We did consumer market research, and as I've already told you, we found that the Hispanic or Latino consumer is a very heavy user. We had hoped that the general industry message, beef, it's what's for dinner, that campaign that has great awareness and recognition would work. That doesn't resonate at all with the Hispanic or Latino consumer because they don't serve a meal that is considered dinner. I don't have it up here. The number one issue and concern that they have is freshness. They want to buy fresh product. I was surprised when I sat and observed these focus groups when they were talking about that. One of the gentlemen that was in one of the groups said, I buy my beef at a little local butcher shop because it's a little darker in color, and I know that everybody else is running around with preservatives and color, and they're spraying this beef to make it stay red. So I want to buy it when it's a little brown because I know that's fresher, just the opposite. But freshness was important. They use flat meat, chuck roll, offal items, a lot of what we would call the thin meats. And they may shop in some of these supermarket chains that I listed here earlier, but basically to buy their meat, they go to the carnicerias. And that local butcher is extremely important. So we have put together a program. We just hired a new agency in which we are working with 150 of the carnicerias in the Los Angeles market to put some special incentive programs together for them to help them address the consumers. We're going to use a lot of outdoor billboards. Yesterday I had the opportunity to be at a photo shoot. What an amazing thing that is. I watched an art director, a food stylist, and a photographer argue for an hour and a half about the positioning of a piece of parsley on the screen of this picture that was being taken to go on a billboard. And when they finally agreed, the parsley had wilted and they had to throw it away. So when we talk about the high cost of advertising, you know, that's a classical example. I'd hate to know what that hour and a half argument cost, but it was there. So we and our marketing to Hispanics are limited. We're limiting ourselves to the L.A. basin. 11.5 million Hispanic consumers in California. 7 million of them are there, so they're concentrated there. The top two rated radio stations in Los Angeles are Spanish language stations. The agencies tell us that with, again, and we have another $400,000 budget in this area, with $400,000, forget radio, to have an impact, you'd have to buy four stations deep. You don't have the dollars to do that. So we're focusing on the outdoor as a reminder, trying to get them to break the tradition, because even though they're heavy users, I was a little startled by the data that heavy beef users, I was startled by the data that reported that they consume chicken more often than beef. They prefer beef, but due to economics, they consume more chicken. So we're trying to get them to break the tradition and come back to the product. And again, the key to this whole thing is the meat manager or the butcher at the carniceria, because they really depend upon that person for their advice. In summary, not just in California, but I think we in the beef industry can all be proud of this. In 2001, we came through a year in which we had a BSE and foot and mouth disease crisis early in the year that put us into a defensive mode rather than being able to play offense. We had September 11th. We had the loss of a majority of our export market to Japan. We had some economic instability, and we went through that year with a 4.9% improvement in beef demand, and that's just not per capita consumption. That's the true economics of the dollars that follow a given quantity of product in light of the competition and its price. We spent, as a nation, $4 billion more on beef in 2001 than in 2000. The current situation in the marketplace would probably dictate that we need a 12% improvement in demand to hold our own with the huge supplies we're dealing with. I wish we could guarantee that. We can't, but we're addressing the issues, trying to keep that plane upward after a 20-year decline in demand and the leveling out, and now 3.5 years of improving demand. That's where we need to go. Our West Coast consumer focus, I think there are two key, what some people call drivers of demand. I prefer to say they're barriers to demand, because I'd rather tear down a barrier than try to build something. One is convenience. With the West Coast lifestyle, this is probably not that different anywhere else in the country, but with more, quote, non-traditional households, if there are two adults in a household, more situations where both are working outside the home and so forth, convenience, quick, easy, those are the buzzwords. That's what everybody wants. And it's now to the point when we do consumer market research and we probe around on the convenience and how important it is, we learn that another item that comes up is cleanup. They're even concerned now about not only how long it will take to prepare the meal and how easy it will be, how long is it going to take to clean up the mess. The other barrier is nutrition. We've got great new nutrition information out. There's an article that appeared in Science magazine last March called The Soft Science of Dietary Fat. Refutes everything the government has put out on nutrition policy, from the dietary goals of the 1970s through dietary guidelines and so forth. I'd love to give you all a copy of this and ask you to read it. It's a little time machine here that I looked a second ago and it was 4 seconds. Now it says 00, so that tells me my time is up. But let me just tell you, it's been a pleasure to visit with you. I'm going to spend the day here, and if you have questions or would like to talk one-on-one, I would certainly welcome that. Thank you.